둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahan, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by SoundMind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance in the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown in the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offering, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back in unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
The music world moves fast. Want to stay up to date on the latest albums and get in-depth examinations with the artists? Check out Consequence of Sound, the podcast. Bite-sized album reviews for the music fan on the go who wants to stay in the know, and much more. Subscribe to the series on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider, and let the writers of Consequence of Sound steer you right. Check it out at consequenceofsound.net/COS podcast. Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Wherever you're listening from today, hit that subscribe button right now so you can keep up with these interviews, and if it's a place where you can leave a rating and a review as well. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, John Spencer. You know him of the John Spencer Blues Explosion or Pussy Galore. He's back with his very first solo album, Spencer Sings the Hits. We're going to talk about what it's been like writing the songs alone as opposed to with a band, how it's sort of a punk record that harkens back to the days of Pussy Galore. We also get into his involvement with the movie Baby Driver, how his song Bell Bottoms soundtracks that iconic opening scene, and if he thinks he might work with Edgar Wright ever again. We'll also hit some anniversary dates, the album Acme at 20 years old and Extra Width at 25. It's Kyle Meredith with John Spencer.
Hey, Kyle, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks.
Well, hey, man, let's start then with the most obvious, easy question. After, what, nearly 35, 40 years in the business, Sing the Hits is billed as your first official solo record. Why is that? What brought you to this point?
Well, 30 years, I suppose, 30 years of playing in bands and making a racket, and touring around and doing this and going there. And, you know, and I didn't have a band anymore. I was playing with Boss Hogg, and Boss Hogg put an album out last year. That record is called Brood X. And I think it's a great record, very proud of it. And we did some touring, played some shows, and I love Boss Hogg, but it's not really a full-time thing. So I didn't have a band of my own. I missed having a band. So I figured, well, we should just get up and do something. So I wrote these songs and went out to the Key Club in Benton Harbor, Michigan, and recorded this album with Sam Coombs and M. Sword.
I mean, you sort of, I don't know if you call it poking fun at the situation or anything, but there are moments around the record where it's mentioned. I mean, you look in Beetle Boots and there's that line, who wants to be in a band? Some self-awareness?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the reason I started playing music, and part of the reason I keep playing music is because I love music, in particular rock and roll. And I mean, it's just an overwhelming passion and obsession. And I suppose passion and obsession includes, you know, everything that goes along with the actual music. So I suppose on this record, on Spencer Sings the Hits, there's some, you know, nods. There's references to youth culture or rock and roll or youth rebellion and pop culture. But that's always been in there. And I think that just comes from, I guess, being a fan. And it's sort of like being a garage band. You know, you're in love so much with some of these records that, you just got to try to do it for yourself. You know, it's like, well, I can, you know, let's try and play Satisfaction in the garage. Let's do it.
Yeah, I've never been one to grab onto the hyperbolic headlines of, you know, rock is dead or whatever. But I do find that rock is underground again as far as the mainstream goes and has been for a while now. And it's really comforting.
Well, for me, I mean, my entire, I came up out of the underground. My heroes were people that always, you know, made their own path and did their own thing. You know, people like, the Velvet Underground, the Stooges, people like Throbbing Gristle or Einstürzende Neubauten, people like Big Black or the Jesus Lizard, you know, or people even like Charlie Feathers, Rufus Thomas, artists that were uncompromising and really just, you know, did their own thing and kept doing it. And, it's nice to have a hit record if you can, but, I'm interested in art and not commerce. So, for me, it's not like I never started banging away on a guitar because I thought I could make money at it. I started banging away on the guitar because I couldn't help it. You know, there was, I had to do it. And, I've been doing this, like I said, we've already discussed, I've been doing this for a while. This thing comes up and down and cycles in and out about, well, rocks in, rocks out, you know, who's dead, who's not. For me, it's still, you know, very much alive. And I've always been, you know, outside the mainstream and down in the underground. So, and, you know, there's a lot of other cool people here, too. And so people want to come in and join the party. That's fine. But, we're just going to keep trying to push forward.
Well, I'm very grateful of that as a fan anyway. Very grateful.
Well, thank you. Thanks.
And you know, your hallmarks, your uncompromising hallmarks are all over this record too. I have in one of your recent interviews, you said maybe more specifically, this is, you know, a punk record that possibly even harkens back to the Pussy Galore days. Did I read that right?
Yeah, I mean, and there are some very definite clear nods to Pussy Galore. You know, the metal percussion is the most obvious. And I think, the heavy influence of 60s garage punk. Another thing is about half the record is recorded and it's kind of a slack tuning. Songs were written in a specific key and then would put the guitar way out of tune and try doing a couple takes at that. And Bill Skibbe, the guy who produced the record with me, he and I would think we'd discuss, well, yeah, that sounds okay, or you know, maybe it's not so loose, you know, tighten up a little bit. And that's another nod to Pussy Galore, because when Pussy Galore was making our early records, we didn't have a guitar tuner, didn't use one, we just kind of tuned to each other, and so the guitars all sort of, I guess, you know, would routinely be, you know, nowhere near, you know, concert pitch. So a lot of those early Pussy Galore records are very, you know, have a very funky sound, and so Some of the songs on Spencer Sinclair Hits were done in a similar slack style.
And speaking of funk, I'll bring up the song Hornet as a favorite of mine. That's got a great groove to it, right from the beginning.
Well, thanks. I think we got to give props to M. Sword, the drummer. He really is such a fantastic player, and he's a guy I got to know working out at the Key Club, the fabulous recording studio, the Key Club in Benton Harbor, Michigan. Because I've been out working there with Blues Explosion and Boss Hog. And so when I wanted to make this record, that's why I wanted to go back there, because I really love that studio. And I like working with Bill Skibbe and Jessica Ruffins, the owner and operators. And Sword is somebody I just got to know from being out that way. He's a buddy of theirs and kind of would help them, you know, help them build the studio, repair things, you know, do kind of, construction jobs. But it's also a fantastic drummer, I learned. And he's got his own recording project. M. Sword, he plays a kind of one-man band, and he's put some records out. But so, I needed a drummer, and Sword, you know, he lives nearby in Kalamazoo, so I called him up. So, yeah, I think he's really what makes that song Hornet something else.
You talk about, you know, how much you like playing with other people and in a band, but the songs themselves, you wrote these alone at the beginning?
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. I do. Most of the time I am writing with other people. I do like being in a group. I like to bounce ideas, you know, and feed off other people. And so, yeah, typically when I'm writing, I'm writing by playing with other people, you know, Judah Russell and Blues Explosion or playing with Boss Hog. You know, that songs come out of playing together. But I didn't have a band, and so I just wrote these songs by myself. So it was kind of a lonely process. But again, here's another throwback to Pussy Galore days, because from the start of that band, I just would write by myself.
I love how it turned out, man. It's such an exciting record.
Well, thank you. I'm pretty happy with it. And you know, these past few days have been a real adventure, you know, because this is the first time we've ever played. We played our fourth show last night in Goshen, Indiana. You know, so we're working hard every day and every night trying to. Well, for me personally, I know for sure I'm trying to find my legs, and with this new band and new sound, and I'm trying to whip it into shape.
Well, I'd like to ask about a few things in the past, if you don't mind. And we'll stick in the more recent past right now, because, of course, you know, Baby Driver comes out. What was that, last year, year before? There you are right at the beginning.
Yeah, it was last summer, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. Bell Bottoms. I mean, how much of a return have you seen on this? Has this been a big noticeable spike?
Well, the sad thing is that, you know, Baby Driver is just a wonderful film, you know, full stop. I really think it's a great movie, you know, but I'm biased because I'm in it. But even if I wasn't, I'm a big fan of Edgar Wright. So yeah, it's a great movie, a big return as far as, like, you know, these days it's all about Spotify. So, you know, yeah, that particular song saw a huge jump on Spotify, but that doesn't really translate to anything. It's not like people are going out and buying a vinyl single or buying the album that features the song. They're just streaming it, and that doesn't translate to anything in my pocket. But there have been some positive results, you know, in the wake of that film, a couple opportunities to license the song for, you know, advertising. So yes, it has been a very good thing. It's been a great thing. But, you know, more than anything, it was such an absolute amazing thrill, you know, to watch that scene and see how, how Edgar used the song and what he did with it. I mean, and I've known about this for probably 20 years. The first time I met Edgar Wright, which was in 2005, I believe. So my math's way off. So, you know, time flies, baby.
That's right.
So when I first met Edgar, one of the things he said to me was, I got this idea for that song. I'd like to use it in a film. I said, yeah, okay. Yeah, because he's had the idea since 94 and 95
when
he first heard Bell Bottoms when Orange came out. You know, he's been thinking about that. So, it's the song, and I'm not just, you know, talking nonsense here. Edgar's told me that the song inspired that entire movie.
Wow.
That was the starting point. So, it's really, you know, kind of too much for me to handle or describe. I mean, yeah, it was really an amazing, great thing.
And now it's one of the most iconic music moments in movie history. I mean, just instantly.
The kid's good. Edgar Wright, man, he knows how to make a movie. Yeah, I mean, I saw it twice. I saw it in the cinema twice, and both times there was just spontaneous applause at the end of that opening scene. So, yeah, he's a very, very clever guy.
Would you work with him again? I'm sure you would. Is there any plans maybe to...
Sure, I don't know if you know, but I'm actually in the film. I have a small cameo. I'm at the end of the movie. Most people don't realize that I'm in the movie. I don't blame them, but I guess if there's a Baby Driver 2 and they need a prison guard, if Edgar calls, I'll go back to prison.
I'll go back to prison with Edgar Wright. That's a nice line right there.
Headline. Boom.
While we're kind of in the movie thing, because I do want to jump back to a couple anniversary albums, too, and this one doesn't exactly fall into that, but it leads into that. In 1997, you covered Right Place, Wrong Time for the Scream 2 soundtrack. That was my introduction, my personal introduction to the blues explosion. Blew my mind, you know, how that happened. And you worked with Dan the Automator on that one, right?
That's right. Yeah, we were very lucky to work with Dan, and he was such a great help. And so the I don't know what in a film it's the music it's not the person who composes the soundtrack but the
supervisor
supervisor, that's right. So the supervisor asked the Blues Explosion to cover that song, and I think we used the opportunity and the budget that they were giving us to work with Dan. We were fans of the Dr. Octagon record, in particular the song Blue Flowers, which was something we played and on repeat endlessly in the tour van. So we were keen to work with Dan the Automator, and this was an opportunity to make that happen. And I can't remember if at that session we then did the other tracks for Acme or they were done at a later session. But yeah, Dan was it was very nice to work with him, and I like our cover of Right Place, Long Time. I think my favorite thing the Blues Explosion do with Dan the Automator, though, is talk about the blues.
Well, that leads into, you know, that Acme is now 20 years old. It celebrates the 20th anniversary this year. And that's a big cast of characters you guys had for that record. You know, Dan the Automator being one of those. Steve Albini was in there.
Yeah, we tracked. We went out to play the New Year's Eve at the Metro in Chicago. And I guess 97 into 98. So what do you call that? New Year's Eve 98? I can't remember. Somewhere around there. And we played, I can't remember if we did one show or two shows at the Metro, but then we went to Steve's studio, Electrical, which was brand new then. And they were still building the big room, the A room, but we worked in the B room for about 3 days after we did our New Year's Eve show. And we went to Steve's place and spent about 3 days recording, and we had a huge pile of songs, so we just laid everything down, and then, you know, in the months following, we, you know, mixed with some songs with one person, some songs with another person, Acme was sort of like a remix record before the fact, you know, a premix or something.
Yeah, right.
my favorite part of the session with Steve at Electrical was, one night we heard that Andre Williams, like a rhythm and blues artist, was playing somewhere relatively close by in Chicago. So we said, "Oh, we gotta go see Honor Williams." And we went over to the club and caught a show, and then went up and talked to him. I had met him once before in New York City, and Honor is a guy who, you know, made these incredible records like the Jailbait and Greasy Chicken and all of these fantastic early singles on Fortune. And then he'd worked, you know, for Ike Turner, and he had such an, you know, he worked for Motown, for Chess. He had such an incredible career as a performer, a songwriter, and a producer. And so he was this legendary guy that sort of had reemerged and resurfaced and was out playing again. So we said, "Oh, we got to go see him." And we went over, saw him, and then went to say, "Hey," and you know, said, "Oh, we're just down the road. We're making a record." And so Andre said, "Well, let me come over." So we went back to the studio and we did a few more songs. One of them was the song "Lap Dance." And one time Andre got in the studio, it was great. He just sort of took over, you know, his producer instinct kicked in. He just took over the situation and, you know, began ordering everybody around. But that was real. That was a great night. Yeah.
And I'll bring up one more too, the last one, because as the big numbers go, Extra Width also is the 25th anniversary of that one as well. And, you know, for me, it seemed like that was the one where you guys really got your footing as to what the blues explosion was going to be
out. The first record from the blues explosion is just sort of a spasm of energy and ideas. And then we went out and played a lot of shows, and we toured a lot, and we did a couple tours with the Jesus Lizard, or maybe just one long tour. And just playing of, you know, a show every night, playing again and again and again, touring helped the Blues Explosion focus and figure out how to work together and help us, you know, more clearly define each person's role within the band and the sound of the band. Also, watching the Jesus Lizard night after night, how they worked and how dedicated they were and how hard they worked was a big influence on us. It made a big impact. And I think, if my memory serves me, at the end of one of these Jesus Lizard tours, we then went straight to Easley Studios in Memphis, and that's where we tracked Extra Width, then mixed it in New York City with our friend Jim Waters. At the old Waterworks.
It's kind of fun to read, you know, some of the articles that were written about the band back in the time, because, you know, culturally, the mainstream or whatever you want to call it, it was easier to be something different and to be accepted, I think, and to kind of sneak in the back door for a lot of bands around that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and while, you know, you might not have sounded like whatever was on, you know, top 40 radio at the time, although there was a lot of rock on there, you still had so many people talking about you. I mean, you were like the buzziest of the buzz. Yeah.
I could say, well, we were lucky, and I think we were lucky. We definitely got some good breaks, but also, you know, we were a good band, and we worked very hard, and a lot of the notice we got was just because we were out playing. We weren't necessarily relying on you know, mainstream media or you know, MTV and you know, we certainly weren't relying on any kind of real radio play. Mm-hmm. We were just out there touring, playing, and, you know, converting people, you know, one show one night at a time.
Story of your life right there. What a line to end it on.
We just did it last night here at the Ignition Music Garage in Goshen, Indiana, which is actually a really wonderful record store and venue. It's in an old auto body shop in the town of Goshen.
You're right up the road from us. I'll point out to you, you're set to be in Louisville on August 9th, so not too far away at all, playing at Zanzibar. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to see the show.
Another very cool venue. Mm-hmm. Nice spot. Yep.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to catch it. And again, I'm so excited for this Spencer Sings the Hits record. Congrats again, man.
Let everybody know, and thank you so much for doing this, and tell them to come out to see the Hitmakers.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure,
all right,
sir.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Likewise. Bye.
Bye. And a big old thanks to John Spencer for that call right there. The new record is Spencer Sings the Hits. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Consequence of Sound's YouTube page right now. Hit that subscribe button to keep up with your favorite artists and interviews. For you podcast fans, maybe you're listening iTunes, Podchaser, wherever you're getting this from, subscribe there. Then give a rating, leave a review as well. You can head over to wfpk.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern, where you'll also find some bonus episodes over there. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.